Messiah in the Tanakh, Session 8. Introduction. Skeptics deny that the Tanakh has any real messianic predictions. First, they say, predictions are impossible, and secondly, there simply are none. Whereas some evangelicals view messianic texts as historical allusions, that is, fulfilled before Jesus ever came. Some scholars say that Jesus was mistaken, or that he played to people's ignorance when citing messianic texts. So we're left with this query. How can we show that there are real messianic predictions in the Tanakh? Well, we'll try to demonstrate this with three test texts. From the law, Genesis chapter 3, verses 14 and 15. From the prophets, Isaiah 7, verse 14. And from the writings, Psalm 110. To do this, we shall refer to each text's context, that is, the immediate content, then the inner texts, how each author develops a theme through his writings, and then intertexts, how other books cite and make use of these texts. We shall do so without referring to the New Testament. Well then, from the law, Genesis 3, verses 14 and 15. Then God said to the serpent, I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and hers. They shall strike at your head, and you shall strike at their heel. From the New Jewish Publication Society, Tanakh. We note that the pronouns they and their translate Hebrew singulars, which are collective nouns. Well, a few notes about this passage. Some call this the Proto-Evangelium, the first gospel. However, skeptics deny that this be a messianic prediction of any kind. Thus, there is the naturalistic view that this text simply presents humans versus serpents in common life, that the term seed or offspring is a mere collective singular noun, even though in Genesis 14:25 it is used of a singular individual, Seth. However, we note that this text is the first in a theme whereby God extends mercy in the midst of judgment. Let us be reminded that the correct interpretation of any texts is its author's intent and the original reader's understanding of that intent. Still, skeptics deny that this is a messianic text. And then there is the symbolical view, that the serpent is merely a symbol representing a perpetual struggle without hope of relief. Others use the sensus plenior view, taking a naturalistic perspective that snakes bite humans and humans kill snakes. If taken naturalistic, however, then there was no messianic intent. Finally, there is the messianic view, that this text predicts a future coming of an individual who will die while gaining victory over the serpent. What serpent? However, caution is due. This passage does not teach a virgin birth, nor a non-lethal bite to the heel. Well, our thesis then states that the Genesis author intended to introduce a future Redeemer and will identify him in the rest of the Torah. First, we look at the context. These words are addressed to an intelligent being. Secondly, enmity can exist only between moral agents, and only individuals. These mutually mortal blows imply individuals. And then there is the theme of the woman's seed or offspring. She will bear Seth, an ancestor of Noah, an ancestor of Abraham, an ancestor of Isaac, an ancestor of Judah, ancestor of David, ancestor of Solomon, and eventually of a future Messiah. Whereas the serpent's seed or offspring are by adoption. In the context, these include Cain, the Nephilim, the Amalek people, and eventually all disbelievers. Next, the inner text, whereby God extends mercy in the midst of judgment. Genesis 4, the Lord put a mark on Cain so that no one would kill him. Although he was a murderer, no one was to kill him. In chapter 6, Yahweh says to Noah, I establish my covenant with you. And in chapter 12 to Abraham, in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Likewise, in Leviticus 26, even when the people rebel, I will remember the covenant I made with their forefathers. Then the intertext. In Isaiah 27, the prophet picks up the serpent theme and equates this with Leviathan. Job 26, he is again cited as the fleeing serpent in the realm of evil. And in Ezekiel 28, you were an anointed guardian cherub until righteousness was found in you, speaking to the devil. And in Isaiah 63, dust shall be the serpent's food. That is to say, there's no redemption for the serpent. And then Genesis 22, your offspring shall possess his enemy's gate. That is, will get victory over them. And then there was the prophecy given by Balaam, the pagan seer and magician, recalling that seed refers to the royal offspring, according to 2 Samuel 7. Balaam said, the vision of the Almighty, O Israel, Israel's king shall be higher than Agag, a Moabite king. What his people will do to your people in the latter days, a scepter shall rise out of Israel. It shall crush the forehead of Moab. Well, now let's look at a text in the prophets, at Isaiah 7:14, where Isaiah, accompanied by his young son, Shear-Jashub, encounters King Ahaz. Isaiah says, listen, house of David, or David's family, the royal dynasty. Assuredly, my sovereign will give you a sign nevertheless, that is, a miraculous sign. Look, the young woman is with child and about to give birth to a son, even though there was none. Let her name him Emmanuel. Emmanuel, of course, meaning with us is God. Now, skeptics doubt that belief in the virgin birth be necessary to the Christian faith. We don't need that belief. Well, what do you do with the gospel stories? Well, they reason that Isaiah 7 was fulfilled in King Ahaz's court when a queen, a concubine, or young woman gave birth. Then, of course, you take the word virgin, Alma, and translate it a young woman, not virgin. Then the child spoken of will be Ahaz's son, unless it's Isaiah's son. Those who prefer a census plenior assert that Matthew wrote a midrash about Jesus, comparing him to Isaiah 7. Not a fulfilled prediction, but a similarity. Let's look at different views on the word Alma. Those who believe in direct prediction say this was fulfilled in the Virgin Mary, the mother of Jesus. Those who prefer a historical fulfillment assert that one of Ahaz's concubines was pregnant and bore a child. Well, others in Sensus Plenior say, well, there was a dual fulfillment, both in Isaiah's time and later in the Gospels. Interestingly, the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Tanakh, uses the word parthenos, meaning a young woman who had never been pregnant. However, another Greek translation attributed to Aquila translates Alma with neonis, meaning a young woman. Well, we assert that the Hebrew term Alma generally means a girl at puberty who is not yet sexually active. Well, let's come back to the context of the verse itself. Tiglath-Pileser, the Assyrian emperor, invaded the northern kingdom of Israel in the year 731 and had completely destroyed the monarchy of the northern kingdom by the year 721. And his descendant, Ashurbanipal, completed the exile of the northern kingdom by 669 BC. At one point, King Uzziah of Judah and Rezin of Syria and Pekah of Israel actually tried to attack Jerusalem in the year 734, threatening to put an end to the house of David, that is, the Davidic lineage. We also note that this wicked King Ahaz had actually burned his first son as a sacrifice to the wicked god Moloch. Now, the content of this passage, it was Isaiah, along with his young son Sheer-Jashub, who came to see King Ahaz, to whom Isaiah predicted three signs. First, a midrash sign in verses 7 through 9, whereby within 65 years, the tribe of Ephraim would no longer be an existing people group. Then he gave a long-range prediction when he said, a virgin is pregnant. Only a pregnant virgin could be a miraculous sign. And then a short-range prediction in verses 16-25, whereby he seems to say that before Sheer-Jashub matures, Assyria will invade the north. Those alive did see Assyria invade the north. Their children, within 65 years, did see Ephraim cease to be a people group. And because of the short term and the mid-range predictions were fulfilled, so Israel believed that eventually there would be a pregnant virgin. They waited for years. Now, in the inner text, what else does Isaiah say about these predictions? Well, in chapter 9, he records, for a child has been born to us, a son has been given us, and authority has settled on his shoulders. Knowing that Hebrew verbs do not have past, present, or future tense, if this is still a prediction, then you could legitimately translate, a child will be born to us, a son will be given to us, and authority will settle upon his shoulders. David's throne and kingdom will be firmly established. Throne asserts that the covenant which Yahweh made with David will be confirmed. More inner text, in chapter 11, a shoot shall grow out of the stump of Jesse, referring to David. The Spirit of God shall alight upon him, a spirit of wisdom and insight. Nations shall seek his counsel, and his abode shall be honored. Jesse, remember, was King David's father, and the Messiah would be a descendant of King David. And the intertext, the prophet Micah exclaimed, and you, O Bethlehem of Ephrath, from you one shall come forth to rule Israel for me, one whose origin is of old. Truly, God will leave them helpless until she who is to bear has borne. The geographical and parental origins of the Messiah. Remember, Micah was a contemporary of Isaiah. So Isaiah may have been alluding to Micah, Micah to Isaiah, or both of them sharing a common theme. Let's go on and look now at the writings in Psalm 110, which reads, "Of David, a psalm. The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand while I make your enemies your footstool." We note two occurrences of the word Lord. The first is the divine name, and the second, the Hebrew word Adon, can mean anyone of superior status. First, we note that this was written by King David. However, there are different views of this. Some simply assert this was not written by David, but they have no proof. Others say, well, being king, David was referring to himself with the phrase, "My Lord," or that David had abdicated the throne and was referring to his son Solomon as "My Lord." Yet it's very possible that David foresaw a greater king, that he was predicting the Messiah. Even though "My Lord" in most texts refers to a human being, in Joshua 5:14, it refers to the divine angel of the Lord. Now, Psalm 110 relates to the preceding psalms and to the following psalms. The author's intent then, quote, "The last word of David, God has made with me an everlasting covenant." And even though the psalms were assembled probably during the exile, those God-inspired redactors both deepened and clarified the psalm's messianic intent. The Psalms 107 through 109 contain pleas for deliverance, Psalm 110 foretells the coming deliverer, and Psalms 111 through 113 express praise for the coming deliverance. Let's look at the context of Psalm 110. First, this is addressed to "My Lord," to someone who is superior to David. That Lord will share the authority of the Lord God. He will rule in Zion over his enemies. People will submit to his power, and he will perform priestly work, being protected by Adonai, another divine name, and he will judge nations and rulers. Now, only the Messiah fits this profile. Well, let's look at an inner text. In Psalm 2, "Kings of the earth take their stand, and regents intrigue together against the Lord and against his anointed," that is, his Messiah. "The Lord said to me, you are my son. I will make the nations your domain, your estate, the limits of the earth." This has never yet happened. Again, only the Messiah fits this profile. And an intertext, Daniel wrote about his vision. "Thrones were set in place, and the Ancient of Days took his seat," an ancient name of God. "As I looked on in the night vision, one like a human being came with the clouds of heaven. All nations must serve him. His dominion shall not pass away." Only Messiah fits this profile. Well, let's try to draw a conclusion. We have looked at three passages. In the Law, Genesis 3:14 through 15. In the Prophets, Isaiah 7:14. And in the Writings, Psalm 110. Thus we note that the three divisions of the Tanakh each present messianic predictions. We also noted that their context, their inner text, and their intertext confirm and amplify the messianic message. For only the Messiah can fulfill these texts. For the previous sessions, visit our website at http://tanach.site. SITE.